Welcome to How to Keep Your Day Job, brought to you by the Morningstar Consultants, your business and life strategists. We're here to explore the crossroads of leadership, career advancement, personal growth, and the transformative world of not-for-profits. At Morningstar Consultants, we've evolved through the rich experiences and insights. It's our mission to offer thought-provoking episodes for not-for-profit champions and rising stars. Dive into strategic planning, board governance, finance, HR, and beyond, all to empower sustainable not-for-profits and thriving communities. Join us for inspiring conversations with extraordinary guests, sharing career highlights and life-defining moments. Remember, as Mark Twain said, find a job you enjoy doing and you'll never have to work a day in your life. We're here to fuel your journey with passion, purpose, and remarkable achievements while strengthening the backbone of our communities. Your time is precious. Thanks for being here. And we're thrilled to share this journey with you. Now let's jump into another exciting episode of How to Keep Your Day Job. So welcome everybody to another episode of How to Keep Your Day Job. Tonight we're talking about remote work. During the unprecedented times during the pandemic, while the world grappled with challenges, an unexpected silver lining emerged, highlighting the resilience of our planet. The widespread shift to remote work led to a notable decrease in daily commutes, reduced traffic congestion, and a significant drop in travel for business purposes. This transition had a profound impact on our environment, demonstrating a clear link between our work habits and the health of our planet. Statistics from various global environmental agencies reported a marked reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. Some cities witnessing clearer skies, cleaner air, just after a few weeks of lockdown measures. This period served as a real-time global experiment, offering us a glimpse into what we could achieve if remote work became a more permanent fixture in our professional lives. The environmental healing observed during the pandemic really underscored the potential of remote work arrangements to contribute to individual well-being and organizational flexibility, but also to the broader goal of a sustainable society. By reducing the need for daily commutes, we can significantly lower our carbon footprints, combat climate change, and move towards a greener, more sustainable future. Throughout the pandemic, my partner and I put on way less kilometers on our car and way more on our bikes. So all this evidence supports a case for remote work, not just as a response to the crisis of the pandemic, but a transformative step towards reducing our environmental impact. As we navigate the future of work, embracing remote arrangements can be a key strategy in our collective effort to protect and preserve our planet for generations to come. And I think everybody can agree it did something for our work-life balance for sure. And speaking personally of somebody with ADHD, it increased my productivity. I felt healthier and I got more done. So today for organizations, I'm going to walk you through remote work arrangements, everything we put in our policy and our forms, so that you don't have to pay us to make it for you. Although you can always contact us to write it for you. Like all policies, we start out with our purpose and our application. And then within the policy, we talk about health and safety, liability, supplies and equipment, travel and logistics, security and confidentiality. We talk about what happens around family care, the responsibility of the employer, the responsibility of the employee, legislation around the policy. And then we talk a bit about the forms and documents that go in the package that we provide employers. So a remote work application, a remote work agreement, agreed to terms and conditions, a health and safety self-assessment, and then our acknowledgements and our agreements as employers and employees. So let's dig in. Of course, as always, we start with that purpose. What's the purpose of this policy? It's to provide information on how remote work arrangements will be structured in situations where the employer and the staff enter into the remote work agreement. The application, this is for all staff and volunteers. Because like I always say, you have the same obligations to volunteers as you do employees. I always encourage policies to have definitions so that the policy is clear and everybody has a good understanding. So we begin the policy by saying that we recognize the opportunities that a flexible working arrangement, such as options to work remotely, can present, and that it encourages this type of work where employers determine it's economically and operationally feasible to do so. So by that, we mean, can you still do your job working remotely? Clearly, if you're doing frontline service, that may not be an option. But a flexible work environment can also contribute to the development of a sustainable society, as we talked about before, reducing greenhouse gas emissions and assisting in our changing climate. So again, it must be understood that some roles are not applicable for remote work. For example, again, somebody that's frontline, somebody who hosts events or needs to be there to maintain or open the office, and often not appropriate for somebody just starting a job until they're well orientated and understand the position. Remote work arrangements can be initiated by the employer as a conditioned employment or by the staff by making a request for remote work, so a flexible work arrangement application. So for remote work requests outside the pandemic conditions, of course, we talk about having staff already accustomed to their job and understand expectations before we enter into an agreement. Remote work arrangements can be anywhere from 1 day to 5 days, depending on if you're part-time, casual, or any parts thereof. And it really depends on the needs of the organization as determined from time to time by the organization, with consideration, of course, for the needs of the staff. So I encourage organizations to have a point person, your executive director, your HR person, whoever that might be, and they would be the person that implements the terms of the remote work agreement. So here are things the agreement must contain. Anticipated duration of the arrangement, so start date and end date, and that it's subject to amendments or termination by the employer. Make sure that there is some sort of notice given to staff. So when we talk about the employer being able to amend or terminate the agreement, there needs to be written notice for the staff because they may need to make accommodations to come back into the office. In the agreement, we highlight the specific days the staff will be working remotely. It's good to have some structure for that. Hours, shifts, when they're working remotely. This is good for the team to understand too and to communicate that. Will the remote agreement be regular or episodic? You document the address of the work location. You need to work with the staff to articulate and work together to make a plan for how they'll be supervised and monitored, and be clear about how their expected results will be achieved. Within the documents, we talk about issues of liability, both personal and equipment. Who's responsible for the costs associated with the remote work, utilities, insurance, need for equipment? Are you completing the CRA working remotely forms? You discuss safety and health responsibilities, emergencies, insurance, the impact on clients, colleagues, and volunteers. These are all considerations. The requirement to adhere to all of the policies, whether they're on-site or off-site, all legislation and professional expectations. And really, the employer or the business owner has to work through the following before approving a remote work arrangement. It has to be operationally feasible. The cost of the arrangement shouldn't be higher than the traditional work site. The quality and quantity of work has to be maintained. Terms and condition of employment, provisions of Manitoba employment standards, the application of policies, legislation has to continue during remote work arrangements, and the service to the clients can't be compromised. So let's focus in a bit on health and safety. The staff has to be able to provide a remote work site that meets employment health and safety standards so that their health and safety aren't jeopardized by doing the remote work. What's their seating arrangement and workstation? Does the manager need to assess it to be able to provide products or things that are ergonomically sound? Some organizations choose to inspect the remote work site, and that's just to protect the staff to make sure that they have a safe and adequate workspace. If their role includes looking after secure or private information, they have to make sure that They can protect the confidential information. And although sometimes this feels intrusive, it's really crucial that the health and safety standards are approved and in writing by the employer and maintained by the staff, because the documentation helps for insurances or coverage such as workers' compensation. I find it's always good to create a contact schedule, so certain check-in times with the staff. And for liability too, we always say in-person meetings with clients aren't permitted to take place at remote work sites, so in your home, just for liability reasons. And this is to protect clients and the staff. We always advise staff that if they have homeowners or renters insurance, that they inform their insurance company that they're working remote. If the staff person does have personal liability insurance, we recommend about $1 million of coverage. And in your work agreement, you have to outline the costs that are covered by the company or the organization and what is not. So insurance costs, hydro, lighting, what type of ergonomic supplies that the company will provide, what is the expectation of the staff. The more you put into your agreement, the clearer it is, and you mutually agree, and there's a common understanding. So when we talk about supplies, equipment, and furniture, staff need to be aware of the electronic network requirements for remote work, secure Wi-Fis if they're working off a VPN. In a staff position, not contract, employer would be responsible for providing computers, software. I have had people contact me about issues with the employers where their work site has PCs. And because of that, it would cost the organization to buy laptops in order for individuals to work remotely. And it's understandable that some organizations aren't able to provide the supplies you need to work remotely. One other concern that I had from somebody who contacted us was they came back to work and their office space was no longer their office. So employers are under no obligation to maintain the staff's current office space while they're in a remote work agreement. They, of course, need to provide them adequate space when they return to the office, but it might not be the same space. So again, for space in your agreements, outline costs such as heat, electricity, taxes, that all of these are the responsibility of the staff, unless the organization is paying for these. Great. And I always tell staff, during the pandemic, there was more supports, but I always tell staff to look at CRA website because things change all the time. I won't say what's current, but check the website to see what you can deduct for certain employment-related expenses. But remember, you can't claim any expenses that are paid by the employer. Travel and logistics. A remote work arrangement can benefit the staff by reducing the amount of travel required. But remember, if there are on-site meetings, team meetings, or client interactions that have to occur in order to fulfill your job duties, that would be at the staff's own expense to come to the office. We've come a long way with video conferencing and Zoom so that staff can maintain contact with their coworkers. Many offices have Office 365 and Teams, that is a forum where you can chat or video conference or call. And again, if your remote workspace, if you're traveling to the office, that isn't covered often in expensive reimbursements costs. But if you're traveling to an external event, then it would be. Just because often in these policies, the remote work agreement isn't your designated primary workplace. Contractors, virtual assistants, where they're working full-time in a remote site, work site, or working in a contract relationship, that's a totally different story. Security and confidentiality. So physical and environmental security, data security, software security, record security, communications, virus protection, license agreements and copyrights. We should all have those discussions. The staff work environment has to protect and not breach confidentiality and security requirements. We talked earlier about a password-protected wireless connection. And then when you're working remote, when your office space, your remote office space is unoccupied, you must ensure that all documents, records, electronics, and any confidential information is secured in order to maintain privacy and confidentiality. Always passwords on your laptop, passwords on documents, and any paper files need to be stored in a locked environment. In your work arrangement with staff, be clear about dependent and family care arrangements. Many arrangements or many agreements talk about dependent and family care arrangements that have to be made in order for staff to not be responsible for their dependent individuals, whether it be parents, children, during their working hours. So, responsibility of the employer. You need to make sure that all factors relating to the work agreement have been addressed. You've had a clear, open conversation with the staff, that everybody's on the same page and agrees, and that there's an agreement to maintain that throughout the work arrangement. To ensure that the remote work arrangements do not result in additional costs to the organization, unless the organization is aware and able to cover those costs, the organization needs to maintain the inventory and equipment, the software, the furniture, anything that's taken to the remote work site for the employee, and make an arrangement for the return of the equipment if the remote work arrangement is terminated or if the staff leaves the organization. Employers need to ensure that the orientation check sheet is completed, that they provided the computers and email access to the employer's network, to do a staff equipment checklist, to ensure that the remote work agreement or arrangements are formalized. So the documents, the remote work application, that it's signed by staff and manager, remote work agreement signed by staff and manager, remote work health and safety self-assessment is complete and signed by the staff and manager. Now for the responsibilities of the staff. To be responsible for all costs of the remote work site, so your insurance, electricity, heat, internet, rent, mortgage, to provide a dedicated office space for use that has some privacy for your remote work arrangement, and to maintain the space that's clean, professional, free of hazards, and a safe condition to work in. Ensure that your workspace meets required health and safety standards. Be aware that the agreement might state that you allow visits from your manager to your remote work site supervisor during normal working hours upon reasonable notice. And that's a big thing for employers. Make sure you give reasonable notice if you have to do a site visit. Staff need to ensure that the equipment and supplies provided by the employer are only used for work-related purposes. They need to take all necessary precautions to secure and protect the property, records, documents, information of the employer. They need to follow safe work habits and inform the employer if they have accidents that occur on the remote work site. Fill out an incident report for the organization if something happens. And of course, adhere to all expectations of the performance of their work or meet expectations within their job description. And finally, staff have to agree to abide by all policies, procedures, legislation, including but not limited to confidentiality of clients or who they serve, department information, documentation, etc. So a typical remote work arrangement application form that staff have and that they can access to initiate a remote work arrangement. They fill in their information, their name, preferred pronoun, address, postal code, title, position. They say their proposed remote work period, so time frame of remote work, month, day, year, frequency. So is it regular? Is it episodic? If episodic, provide details. So Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 9 till noon, I'll work at home. Their preferred start date, their preferred start and end time of the remote work. As much details you could provide is great, because you could even write if it's variable hours. So Monday, I'll be 9 to 3. Tuesday, I'll be noon to 8. Wednesday, I'll be, so you get the idea. And then I always put a section for remote work site time allocation. So what percent is remote work site and what percent is on site at the office? And then when staff or employers are initiating this request, a reason for the request. Sometimes employers initiate it because they're going virtual. They're getting rid of overhead costs for rent. And sometimes staff are initiating it because of environmental allergies or factors or the commute. I hear from friends who worked in downtown Toronto that their life is significantly better because they're not spending 2.5 hours in the car one way. I can't imagine a commute like that. I'm sure there are very happy people in busy urban centers when they don't have to go into the busy urban center as much as they did before. Like I said with my partner and I decreasing driving, I was even wondering if I needed a car this year, actually. Last year, I put 4,000 kilometers on my car. Oh, do I appreciate Zoom meetings. And as a leader, I appreciate not having a very large budget for parking, for food costs for meetings. Next form is the remote work agreement, where we talk about who it's between, the staff and the employer. We write the normal work week that consists of when their worksite days are, when their remote worksite days are. We document again when their hours will be, the worksite location. And this is where some of the agreements between staff and employee come into place. Things like we agree to promptly report all work-related incidents and accidents to our supervisor or manager. If you're a direct service agency, the fact that clients wouldn't be allowed in the remote work site or somebody's home. Pertinent information about costs and insurance. We talked about things about hydro and rent and that kind of stuff. And what the organization insurance covers and what it does not. So private or personally owned furniture that the staff are using wouldn't be under the insurance of the organization, and the organization's equipment wouldn't be under the person's insurance. I always make sure that the staff have their policy signed in their file, their email or computer systems policy. We put in the agreement that they have to ensure that their required IT standards are always followed. Things are password protected, the wireless connections password protected. That then they're responsible because they won't have on-site IT support to do all of the updates on their equipment or bring it into the organization for the IT department to look at. And to support the staff member, you outline what you do pay for and support. So office supplies, couriers, work-related telephone expenses. And all of this should also be put into your expense and reimbursement policies. And outline the policies in your agreement that attach to this remote agreement. So travel and expense and reimbursement policy. Make sure you document that withdrawal from the agreement from any party has to be in writing. And employers often put in there that the agreement automatically terminates when a staff moves to a new position because they have to go through the whole assessment again. And then once everybody signed off, we always put the small piece at the bottom about that staff and the organization agreed to the above work arrangement at the specified remote work site. The agreement can be terminated at any time by either party providing, and then write how many weeks, months notice. Generally, it's 2 weeks. Often it's a month. And that I would individually negotiate with the staff because you have to take into consideration their personal circumstances. Perfect example would be the person working in downtown Toronto. If their family bought a house 3.5 hours away, then you would have to give them more than a month's notice to be able to return to the office. Next, we have a remote health and safety self-assessment checklist. So we have the staff review their environment and complete the form, and then put it in their personnel file. And then I break it down into sections, floor area, lighting and electrical, environment, workstation and office furnishing, and other. So floor area, is it free of hazards? Is there a surface clean, dry, and level? And you wonder why we ask these things, but if an employee is covered under workers' compensation, there will always be an investigation to the injury. And if you have this type of documentation first saying that there wasn't anything wrong with the floor, it will help support the person's claim, and it also protects the liability of the organization that they've done their due diligence to provide a safe workspace. So my form is quite detailed. I even write things, are carpets secured? What are the stairwells like? Are there railings on the stairs? Are there clear and unobstructed passages to move around in the work location? Lighting and electrical, is there adequate lighting to perform the work, all the electrical equipment in good working order, including power bars and extension cords, CSA approved and in good working condition. Are there phone lines, or are you providing them a cell phone? Charging cables, electrical cords. Always safer as an employer to provide those type of things. Is the environment conducive to work? Temperature, noise, ventilation. Are there smoke alarms, smoke detectors? Do they have a portable fire extinguisher? Office furnishings. Are you providing the office furnishings? Did they prefer to use their own office furnishings? If so, are they safe? Is the chair ergonomic, in good condition? And then other, do they have a first aid kit accessible? Do they have emergency contact numbers? Is there an evacuation route for fire? Is the work location free from identifiable physical, chemical, electrical, and fire hazards? Instead of a site visit, some organizations just ask for a picture or a photo of the remote work site, and that's stored in the personnel file in case there is an incident or accident or claim. And then we provide the organization a tool called Remote Worksite Health and Safety Self-Assessment Acknowledgement. And this is, again, an agreement between the employee and the employer. I confirm that I have completed the self-assessment of my remote worksite and I attest to the information contained within it. It's accurate and complete. I further attest that I will take all necessary corrective actions to eliminate any hazards noted on the self-assessment before beginning the remote work arrangement. I understand that the safety inspection may be made of my remote work site, remote work location, with prior notice. And that's the staff acknowledgement and the supervisor or manager. I've met with the above noted staff person who confirms that their remote work site is adequately equipped and safe from a health and safety perspective. The staff is further aware that they must notify us immediately of any changes to the remote work site that could change the status of their self-assessment. And all of these documents, including a signed copy of the policy, all the agreements, are in the staff personnel file, also given a copy to the staff. If your organization is a unionized organization, I always bring the union in when we're looking at the initial drafts of the forms. And I know this sounds like so much process and extra forms. But like my dad used to say when I was a kid, it's all good fun until somebody loses an eye. Okay, I'm Gen X, and that's how we were parented. All those TikToks you see on Gen X, they're pretty right on. But honestly, as an employer, you have a responsibility to keep staff safe. By creating these arrangements, you provide flexibility. And by putting things in place, you cover your organization's liability. So as we conclude today's episode on carving out a remote work process, we've navigated through the comprehensive approach of an organization's nuances of the policy designated to foster flexible, efficient, and sustainable remote work environments. From the inception of remote work arrangements to the detailed structuring of the policy, health and safety considerations, the environment, and the environmental benefits witnessed during the global shift towards remote work. It's clear that the future of work is not just about where we work, but how we work together to achieve our goals while also caring about our planet and ourselves. This discussion has illuminated the importance of clear communication, mutual trust, and a shared commitment to maintaining professional standards, regardless of the physical location. As organizations and individuals, we have an opportunity to redefine the workspace. Not just for the sake of operational efficiencies or employee satisfaction, but also as a crucial step towards environmental sustainability. Let's carry forward the lessons learned and insights gained, using them as the foundation to build a more flexible, inclusive, and sustainable future work. Thanks for joining us today for Beyond the Office, Crafting Remote Work Success. We look forward to exploring more facets of the evolving work landscape with you in future episodes. And if you need a remote work policy in all the forms, we've got you covered. Reach out. Thanks for joining us today. I hope today's discussions and strategies inspire your path forward. Whether you're navigating your career, leading with purpose, nurturing a not-for-profit, or contributing to the community environment, We're here to offer guidance and support in every aspect of your life. At Morningstar, we recognize the challenges you face balancing your many roles and responsibilities. That's why we're just not business strategists, we're life strategists too. Our approach acknowledges the personal well-being and success are deeply interconnected with professional achievements. Our dedication extends beyond individual triumphs. We're committed to building resilient organizations and empowering leaders to enact meaningful change. Stay engaged with us at MorningstarConsultant.com, follow us on social media, and sign up for our newsletter. Explore a range of services from customized courses, business consulting, to interim executive support and personal coaching. All of our services are crafted to foster lasting transformation. We're signing off with a heartfelt thank you to our podcast community for being with us today. Continue to chase your passions, uplift those around you, and weave your unique narrative as a powerful agent of positive change.